Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading this morning from, starting from Canto 10, Chapter 34, Text 26. This is the Shankachuta story. So they, Holi is going on, and the activities that one customarily does at Holi is going on, singing and dancing and so forth, and Krishna and Balaram putting on a concert of singing all the notes of the musical scale at one time, which no one can do, and enjoying, and the gopis who were attending were enjoying like anything. They were stunned. And they were singing songs in glorification of Krishna and Balaram, and it was a very happy time. And it's evening. We heard towards the beginning of the story that the moon had risen, and full moon, Purnima, and fragrances, the breeze of jasmine and lotus flowers. So it was bees, and the whole, the atmosphere was fantastic, and the experience was totally transcendental. And then oh king, like that's astonishment, Shukadev speaking, even as the two lords looked on, Shankachuda brazenly began driving the women off toward the north. And there's different ideas of what toward the north indicates. Udicham, northern direction. The women who had accepted Krishna and Balaram as their lords began to cry out to them. And here's the Bhaktivedanta purport. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti, the demon... No, he's being called the demon. There's a reason why. Although he's a follower of Kuvera, he's not in the devotee category. The demon, Shankachuda, shook a large stick at the beautiful young girls, thus frightening them and driving them toward the north. He did not actually touch them, as is corroborated in the following verse. So we'll get to that one. This is 26, and we'll read 27. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. In front of Krishna and Balaram's eyes, Shankachuda drove away the gopis, who were shouting and crying, "Oh Rama, oh Krishna, please protect us," frightening them by whirling a big stick. He fled with them to the north. One should understand that he could not actually touch them. In the next verse, this is explained. And Jiva Goswami writes, because of his attack, Krishna and Balaram looked on with disrespect. The demon acted in this way because he was fearless, Shankitaha. He took them north, since this was where the Guyakas or Yakshas lived. It was the custom of the Horika festival that the women line up in separate rows. So here we have the Guyakas and then parentheses Yakshas. Like the terms are interchangeable. How? I'm not so clear. Maybe subset of the Yakshas or Guyakas. Sanatan Goswami Oh, King, Shukadeva calls out, because of astonishment at the foolishness of the demon, or out of great pain. So he says, not just narrating, he's a Rasika Bhakta. He's feeling the pastime as he's narrating the pastime. The demon remained there as if insane, and then drove them off fearlessly. It was not difficult to take the women away, since they were soft by nature. The singular indicates that one woman, Radha, was taken, as in Lalita Madhava. So what's Lalita Madhava? Lalita Madhava is one of the two dramas that Rupa Goswami composed. Lalita Madhava, Dugdha Madhava. And it's Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. Those are the two divisions. And in Rupa, so Sanatana Goswami is referring, that means they knew what each other were writing. That's not even implied, it's explicit. So in Lalita Madhava, Rupa Goswami writes that it was Radha who was taken. When the plural is used later, it is used out of respect. This is like, you know, refinement of Sanskrit analysis of what's being written here by Vyasadeva, spoken by Shukadeva. Or it indicates that he also took her attendants. That's the plural. He said, Krishna said, do not fear to comfort the others. Or maybe Shankachuda said. Anyway. Or the singular is used in this verse to indicate a class, a group. Jana indicates all the gopis. They had been mad with prema because of singing, pramada. Thus, they were inattentive to the situation. Paragraph. They called out to Krishna and Balaram loudly with pained voices. The demon took them away by force and by many methods far away to the north where the Guyakas had their homes. Guyakas. Same as like when Dhruva went chasing the Yakshas. After they killed his brother, stepbrother. He went to the north. He went on the other side of the Himalayas. We discussed that yesterday. What does that mean? It could mean literally the Himalayas. It could mean the Bhumandala. Because there are other references in the Bhagavatam where kings and persons went to places that just like they didn't have access to, but they had, but by higher dimensional space or by higher consciousness, they could access place in Bhumandala that we can't even see. So rather than giving those examples, it's a principle. Guyakas reside in, the Yakshas reside in Bhuvar Loka. They may have a second residence somewhere on earth, but that somewhere on earth could be A or B, could be on the earth planet on the other side of the Himalaya mountains, or it could be on Bhumandala. In any case, he headed north. First, he would take them to his house, or since they were playing east of Govardhan, the demon took them to Kamsa at Mathura in the north. So you know your geography. Here's Vrindavan. And way over here, way over on the west, that's Govardhan. And it runs north and south. So east of Govardhan, if you go north, you can go to Mathura. So one of the renderings from the previous, commentary was, as a follower of Kuvera, such and such happened. Or another rendering from the Sanskrit is, not having followed Kuvera, he could have, it could have been from the Sanskrit, that he abandoned Kuvera and became a follower of Kamsa. Flip a coin. Both renderings are, according to Sanatana Goswami, possible. But he went north, that much we know. Text 27. Hearing their devotees crying out, Krishna! Rama! And seeing that they were just like cows being stolen by a thief, Krishna and Balaram began to run after the demon. No purport, but here's Jiva Goswami. They were eternal associates. That's the gopis. Sva parigraham. And thus it was necessary to protect them. Because of this, it should be understood that Krishna and Balaram were most disturbed. I mean, it's not that they would have been okay if it wasn't their eternal associates, but they were most disturbed. So even if you're Krishna and in Vrindavan, and even if you're a gopi in Vrindavan, you can have troubles. But Krishna to the rescue. The two brothers were of one mind because of mutual affection. The many gopis under the protection of the two brothers were taken by one person at once, while they became disturbed. An example is used to illustrate this. They were like cows forcibly driven away by a thief for himself. The gopis also ran like the cows, but they were not touched by Shankarachuda. Sanatana Goswami writes, loudly the gopis chanted or called out their names, Kroshantam. Because they called out, the two boys looked carefully, Vilokya. They called out continuously. They called their dear ones, Sva, Parigraham. They saw their dear ones, Sva Parigraham, being taken off, and thus had to protect them. The two felt great pain. Paragraph. The two, out of affection for each other, acted as one person and ran after the demon. The gopis were like cows taken by the teeth of a tiger. As best of the cowherds, they could run fast. They ran after the demon. It is also suggested that they ran fast, since otherwise some disaster would occur. That's, I think we're going to end with that. Now, if you were Krishna, would you arrange a pastime like that? Close your eyes and imagine you're Krishna. Hey, that would be fun. Let's do that. Unholy, you know. Right in the middle of this festive, in this, on the scene, on stage, comes a demon dressed very lavishly and wearing a very special jewel on his turban, completely ignoring Krishna and Balaram, carrying a big stick and wheeling it about and chasing the gopis. Maybe Krishna made a mistake. That's not our position. So why is he doing this? So different pastimes can have multiple different purposes. But one of the frequent occurrences in Krishna's and Rama's pastimes and other pastimes of the Lord, there is some spike of some super danger, and the Lord makes some arrangement to protect the devotees from that danger. It, you know, in one sense, can be part of the Pritranaya Saudunam Vinoshaya Chaduskritam purpose of the Lord's appearance. And so when he appears in this world, it's not that everybody becomes nice. Demons are demons and they're dealt with. But demons that appear in Krishna's pastimes, what can we say about them? Because there's different things we can say about different ones. The living entity cannot act, even demons or devotees, cannot act without the sanction of Krishna. That means super soul is within the heart. You know, the earlier pastime was the pastime of the serpent. You know, if you were Krishna, would you close your eyes and be Krishna for a while? Have your father, Nanda Maharaj, your eternal associate, Nanda, being swallowed by a serpent. And then all the elders wake and they do what they can do to try to, but they can't. How much distress? Who can imagine? So that kind of a mood or emotion, don't expect when that lovely day comes, you become a pure devotee and you join Krishna's pastimes, there won't be any experience of any negative emotions anymore. So don't be under that illusion. But those negative emotions are ecstasies. It's a secret, or not a secret, it's a mystery. Some of you may recall we encountered this during the Ayodhya Yatra. I discovered something that I hadn't understood before the Ayodhya Yatra. There was sadness and sadness. The word, forget how the word is used, the Sanskrit word is translated into English. Sadness isn't the word. Sorrow. There's the word. Sorrow. And I was feeling it, person after person after person. So Ram is banished to the forest. Not only he's not to become king, but he's banished to the forest for 14 years. And then when that new, and he's like, fantastic. Anything else, mother? I'm leaving today. And she was expecting a pushback, but she was astonished that he was like, I'm ready to go. Before the day falls, I'll be gone. So then he goes to tell other people, and it's sorrow and sorrow and sorrow and sorrow and sorrow. And then he's taken in the chariot, and King Dasarath's chief assistant, he has to depart from Ram, and it's sorrow, and it's an ocean of sorrow. It's like, close the book, let's talk about something else. It's too sad. So why? He's the personality of Godhead. Why make people, and Dasarath died. what to speak of everybody else. Multiple purposes, but it's a secondary rasa, and I learned this by studying Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and of the secondary rasas, there's lords of each of them, and Ram is the lord of sorrow. Well, that's not nice. Like, how'd you like to be lord of sorrow? But within Krishna is everything, including that what Ram has. So there's what looked like sorrow, but it's an ecstasy. It's right in Nectar of Devotion, and it's more detailed in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And in Hanuman's prayers, from chapter 19 of Canto 5 is prayers by the residents of Jambudweep. That's the title of the chapter. And Jambudweep has different varshas. And one of those varshas is where Hanuman resides. Hanuman was left behind when Ram took everybody to Ayodhya. And that's where he resides, and with others, and they're constantly singing the glories of the personality of Godhead, Lord Ramachandra. That's what it's said in that chapter. And then he offers a number of prayers. And one of those prayers is, it's not possible. It's not possible that Sita and Ram can be separated. But they certainly looked like they were separated, and they certainly looked like he was filled with sorrow. What to speak of people sorrowful that he was banished? What kind of sorrow did he experience? That Sita had been kidnapped. And it's like, it doesn't, like, it's not like a one-time thing and he got over it. It just keeps reoccurring and reoccurring and reoccurring and spiking and then subsiding. Like seeing her jewels on top of Rishimukh Mountain, and he just loses it. So, again and again, and again and again, it's an ecstasy, which, you know, don't give me that kind of ecstasy, please. I'd like a different one. It's not on the menu. I mean, it's on the menu, but I didn't ask for it. Please take it away. It's not like that. It's not like you pick and choose. I don't want that one. I want this one. It's an ecstasy that enhances the primary rasa. So the primary rasa of the gopis was being enhanced by a demon. He didn't touch them, but doing what he did. And Krishna to the rescue. It strengthens the primary rasa. And there's other things that are going on simultaneously, multiple things going on simultaneously. The demon was delivered. And look what happened to Akrura. By just simply taking Krishna to Mathura from Vrindavan, he was cursed by the gopis. Don't mess with the gopis. Don't mess with the gopis. As we have been separated from Krishna, you will have to endure the same. No, they didn't have to say that. It would have happened anyways, but they said it, so it happened anyways. And then that's just part of the unfolding of Krishna's Leela. And then Krishna's Leela unfolds in different ways. What we hear is each time Krishna appears in the world, the same theme or essence of rasa is repeated, but there's variegated details. Variegated details. Because Prabhupada's explanation is variety is the mother of enjoyment. So Krishna is the best of enjoyers. So there's variety. But his intention is stimulating the love, exchanging loving dealings with different devotees. So it doesn't look like a loving dealing to have his beloved gopis and then Krishna's feeling angry, very disturbed. That's an emotion. And he's the Supreme Lord. And he's orchestrating his own pastimes. So everything is within Krishna, but it's transcendental. And everything here is an imitation, perverted reflection of everything transcendental. And here we are in this perverted reflection place, having negative emotions about stuff. Our personal lives and this is and that and the world circumstance and why didn't Parikshit Maharaj just kill the personality of Kali? Would have made things altogether different. He could have. He had the power. And he was punishable by death for what he did. But he didn't. It could have been a whole different, you know, situation here. But he didn't. The commentary explains, Prabhupada's BBT commentary says, he considered this is Krishna's plan, that this is Kali Yuga and he's the personality in charge of Kali Yuga, the personality of Kali. And so I can't kill him. So he didn't kill him. That's a Kshatriya's duty. For persons who engage in culpable crime, there's an appropriate penalty. Personality of Kali. So now as a result, I can, you know, one of my biggest disturbances, I'll share with you, one of my biggest disturbances is the proliferation of burger places, chains all over the world. How many cows? What is the consequence for that? It's got to go somewhere, and it is. Chaos. And, you know, when the worst of the pandemic was going on, the lines at, you know, without naming the names of the burger places, the cars were lined up going around the building and out the other side. To, you know, because then they didn't have to interact with anybody. They just get their... And everything else was shut down. But that was really active. How sinful. And they want an end to the pandemic. And then there, you know, then the Kali Yuga thing goes on of who did it and what to do, you know, and on and on and on and on. Just Kali's dancing on the heads of people who are so sinful. And we're trying to be, you know, in the midst of all of that, trying to be nice Hare Krishna devotees. It's disturbing to any sensible person. So what do? We follow our acharyas, that's what we do. And our acharyas had the remedy for the disease. It's not just cruelty to animals or even specifically cruelty to cows. That's just one, it's a major part, but it's just one part of the whole thing. So what do? And it's Kali Yuga. What are you going to do? You propagate the Yuga Dharma. That's what we do. We engage in it and extend it. That's what we do. And to the degree that is effective, then the symptoms of Kali are reduced, which is exactly how the whole Bhagavatam starts. The sages saw. Canto 1, chapter 1. They saw, and they wanted to do something. And then comes Sutta Goswami, and he discussed, expressed the Bhagavatam, and so forth. That's our path. That's what we do, vigorously. Not, you know, have a peaceful life. It's in a turmoil-filled world. We do our part. That's what Vaishnavas are supposed to do. We're doing it for ourselves, and we're doing it for the benefit of others. Even we're seating together, and some persons are on a video call and so forth. It's the sound vibration, hearing and chanting and propagating the sound vibration. That's what we do. In this age of Kali, Bhagavad Dharma. And propagate the holy name and the message of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. So, sorry to go off on that tangent about current affairs, but it's on people's minds anyways. It's oppressive. What are we to do? So that's what we're to do. We're to do what we're doing and expand it. That's Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Rather than killing demons, it's kill the demoniac mentality through his astras and so forth. Any comments, questions?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, as you were speaking about Krishna putting his devotees through distress for multiple purposes, we may not have understanding of each of those purposes. I was somehow thinking about this. One of our congregation members left his body. We keep hearing this, Krishna does things for a purpose, he's kind and loving. But it's a little bit shaking when these kind of things happen.
Which kind of things? Someone leaves their body?
Yeah. The heart becomes a little shaky, and is Krishna really kind and loving? Kind of a thought last 2 days I was going through.
Well.
So just, sorry, Maharaj. So I was just, as I was contemplating on that feeling, I was thinking, is it really because I'm concerned about that person or about Krishna? Or is it coming from my heart that I don't understand the purpose? Is that putting me in that kind of a uncomfortable situation?
Well, let's go to, aside from a particular event like the departure of a loved one, family member or whoever. Step back from that and the feeling that one feels, the grief that one feels. You know, you can give an explanation of why there is the grief. But let's go back and you know, the question of why creation. Hey, he's all powerful. And he's all perfect, so why doesn't he make a place that doesn't have that? It's called the kingdom of God. Doesn't have that. And the creation is for people that don't want that. It's two things. To provide an opportunity for living entities to fulfill their mistaken, illusory desire to be independent enjoyers, because there isn't such a thing. And the other is to correct that misunderstanding. or misuse of free will. And there's many, many, many opportunities and reminders and what your reference is one of them. So when it happens, it doesn't make it okay. It's not like that. But there's a lesson. It's everything here is impermanent. And we become attached to the impermanent. And when it's gone, we feel something. It feels stronger towards a family member or a loved one. But it can be anything. You know, you get a rip in your socks. You know, okay, I'll get a new pair of socks. But that's the way of the material world. That everything is temporary. Now you have it, now you don't. Now you see it, now you don't. You become attached, and it's gone. And you feel something prior, hankering and lamenting. Brahmabhuta, prasanatma, no sochati, na kangsati. Samak sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labhate param. So the final verse is achieving bhakti. So who's are eligible for achieving bhakti? The first three lines is who's eligible. So supposing, you know, I or you or the person who you're speaking about that lost a family member, they're a devotee. So now, it should be nice. And here comes something that's not nice. So how is God kind if he's allowing something not nice to happen to a good person? Me or your friend or their family member? Why creation? What's the lesson here? Is there something that we're supposed to understand from this? You know, now we'll go back to the topic during the class, the sorrow. Even in Krishna's pastimes, the Supreme Lord's pastimes, there's sorrow. Well, how is God kind if he creates something that built into it, there's sorrow? And that's in the spiritual world. It's the different, so what's the purpose behind that? So what's the purpose behind this? No, people don't go there. They go just stay with their feeling. And they feel their feeling. They don't see the purpose behind it. They don't see the kindness, the kind hand of the Supreme Lord behind it. Everything here is temporary. And, you know, good people, religious people know that. Theoretically. But when it hurts, it hurts. Now, what should you do with the person who is hurting? You know, it depends on the person. But it's commonly not a good idea to give them a Bhagavad Gita class. It's just help them in that period of grieving. But depend on the person. And then, you know, at the right time, in the right way, and so forth. And if you're Narada Muni and Angira Muni, then you can tell like it is. And, you know, if you understand the person on the other side is King Chittaketu, you can tell him like it is. And then it comes bhakti, because that was the sequence with King Chittaketu. So, how you interact with somebody that's in that position depends on somebody. And also depends on the rootedness that you are in understanding the big picture. creation and transcendence. This is an impetus to go to transcendence. Staying in the temporary has many unwanted features, not just, you know, negative emotions. Okay, something further.
Maharaj, as you have brought up that point of not giving the Bhagavad Gita class to them when they're in that kind of distress, on this current affairs thing, we were having the discussion and this point came up when we want to share our idea of this impermanence or not.
We want to share what?
That we are not this body and trying to connect to the other person to, something higher instead
yes.
of just being bound
yes.
there. There was this thought came up that that's being insensitive. How do we?
It depends. How you do that depends on the person and, you know, time, place, circumstance. But that's the objective. So the initial is you reach out in comfort. Depending upon what current event you're speaking about, shortly, I hope she's listening, I'm going to be getting the bullet point summary of these three talks by black devotees speaking about, you know, systemic racism in the world and the degree to whatever degree it's there within ISKCON. It's there. Not, you know, just because we're not transcendentalists yet. So the videos, the YouTube link and all of that, the bullet points, people can go and see. So it gives them an idea of how people who are in black bodies or African American bodies regard the current situation. I don't know how they handled the situation. I haven't listened yet. But, you know, give a perspective. So rather than being, you know, on the outside looking in, ask people that are on the inside looking out and how to handle in a transcendental way. I imagine there's lots of, you know, so is violence to counter violence? Is that the path? Somebody feels that. I know somebody that feels that. Because you gotta push back. And I suggest to that person, watch the Hare Krishna movie and see the images of what the scene was when Prabhupada came to America. There was violence and there was violent pushback against the violence. And there was unrest and, you know, like we discussed last night, demand for social change. That was the mood. And how did Prabhupada handle himself? So that can tell us something about how we, as practicing devotees, we're not acharyas, can understand how to handle ourselves in these situations. When people are going through justified turmoil. And we can't imitate, but we can learn lessons from our founder, Acharya, how he did what he did. So it's a really good opportunity to understand the mood of our founder, Acharya. And we're not imitators, but we're followers. And then these devotees that are speaking in these, whatever it is that they did, you call it seminar or talk or something, how they, so they're from the inside looking out and helping our ISKCON community understand what's going on here and what can we do about it. It must include Lord Chaitanya's method. Sangha, Astra Parshadam. He descended with his means of changing the mood and direction of the age of Kali, and Prabhupada, as an empowered representative, did it on his behalf, empowered by Lord Chaitanya to do what he did. So we can take lessons from that and follow. Try to understand and follow. Okay? All right.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, so when Krishna incarnate says an incarnation on the planet Earth, do those pastimes still go on in the spiritual world?
Oh, yeah. Krishna expands. He doesn't take, like, put up a sign on his door and say, I'm doing pastimes now, I'll be back in a while. Okay. In fact, Krishna's pastimes in Krishna Loka are eternally going on, and his earthly pastimes, in the Sanskrit word is aprakat, which means unmanifest, they're also eternally going on. They are presently, it's way past the time Krishna appeared and disappeared, his pastimes are eternally going on in both places, right now. I mean, eternally. But sometimes they become manifest, and then some form of Krishna and his whole entourage, they descend and they perform the manifest pastimes that are eternally going on in Krishna Loka, and then he winds it up. And not only here, but another inconceivable thing is they're always going on somewhere and somewhere in the universes of this created realm, eternally. And that means also, I hope your seatbelt is fastened. That means also his associates have their multiple expansions. You with me? So here's the question, and here's Prabhupada's answer. Prabhupada, it is said that Krishna's pastimes in this earthly realm are eternal. Yes. Prabhupada, Arjuna is constant associate of Krishna wherever he's performing his worldly pastimes. Yes. Does that mean that there's multiple Arjunas? Because when Krishna, let's say the battle of Kurukshetra, or let's say, you know, Arjuna is born somewhere, you know, in his earthly pastimes as the son of Indra, right? So then his birth over there and his birth over there and his birth over there and his birth over there. He's eternally being born. It's like multiple Arjunas. Or take any pastime. His, you know, marrying Subhadra. And he's marrying Subhadra and he's marrying Subhadra and he's marrying. So Arjuna expands himself. That's a mind blower. Krishna, okay. I mean, that's like a stretch, but Arjuna? How do we understand that? It's inconceivable. And we understand it through bhakti, and just starts with, this little mind cannot stretch that far. It's beyond my mind's capacity. It's inconceivable in this material mind. So I have to let go of that method of trying to understand it and understand it in a different way. What's the different way? Hearing, awakening of bhakti, and through the medium of bhakti, things that I can't understand today, someday I'll be able to understand. At least, in principle, I accept. Krishna has inconceivable potencies, and he can invest those potencies in whoever he likes. If he can lift Govardhan Hill, he can do whatever he likes. And he likes. He likes performing pastimes that attract the hearts and the minds of living entities that, you know, went to jail because they were rebellious and broke laws. So they're in jail, the jail of material existence. And he wants to free them from material existence. So he appears in the jailhouse and does pastimes. He's very kind. Okay. That good? You follow up?
Like, a thought came up to me, like, so, like, the end of Brahma's life.
In the end of Brahma's life.
The material world gets, like,
withdrawn.
Destroyed. Yeah, withdrawn. So, but you said Krishna's, like, pastimes go on eternally. Like,
yeah.
Where do his...
In the spiritual dimension, when the material universe is withdrawn, the spiritual dimension isn't withdrawn. Let's do this. You're familiar with the Dhruva story, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Vishnu says, you rule your father's kingdom, and when that's over, I'll make an arrangement for you to go to Dhruvaloka. And that Dhruvaloka is the eternal place. It's not destroyed when this place is destroyed. So that's, okay, now this place is destroyed at some point, the end of the day, the end of life of Brahma. So then what happens to Dhruvaloka? It stays because it's a spiritual place. When you get your vacuum cleaner out and you clean the carpet, the carpet doesn't disappear. It's still there. You take the stuff that's in the carpet and then the carpet's still there. That's a material example. The spiritual realm is eternal. It doesn't come and go. So you remove, you extend, you maintain, and the spiritual realm doesn't change. Let me ask you this. What happens to the soul? At the end, during this creation, the souls go from one body to the next body to the next body. So what happens when the whole thing is withdrawn? What happens to those souls? They still exist. They don't have bodies anymore because bodies are finished, at least for a while. So they're within the body of Mahavishnu, hanging out, waiting for the next creation. But they're there. Eternally, the souls are eternal. The abode of Krishna is eternal. So when this part is withdrawn, it's eternal. Isn't that good news? Okay. Someone else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I think that question came when we were talking about even in this material world.
Talking about the material world.
Yeah. I mean, the Krishna's pastimes, it happens on the earthly planet maybe 5,000 years back after Krishna ended his pastimes on the earth.
Could you turn the speaker this way because I can't hear? After Krishna's pastimes are over on earth, then what?
So, I mean, though it is happening parallelly in spiritual world,
yeah.
In the material world also you might be performing those pastimes somewhere else.
Yeah, somewhere else. The sun is always rising.
I think that was the reason that question came.
Okay.
Because what happens when the material world goes? So
that's okay.
Yeah,
the pastimes are eternal. Eternal means eternal.
Yeah.
It doesn't depend on matter. Matter comes, matter goes. The pastimes are not dependent upon matter coming, going, or this configuration, that configuration. It's eternal.
Yes.
No material cause.
So another question about the Krishna and his devotees expanding into of pastimes.
Yes.
So what happens in the case of, that question also came, Vidura. When he got, Yamaraj got cursed to come as a Vidura, what happens to...
So two things. Aryama took his place. And because I spent about 2 hours yesterday going over not exactly this topic, but the related topic. The related topic is, where is the abode of Yamaraj? You ready? I'll send you the document. Let's see, because there's so many quotes. So many, many, many quotes. There are two names that are used. Samyapuri, and Pitraloka. Pitraloka very clearly is in the region below Patalaloka and above the Garbhadak ocean. The planets of the Pitris, that's, you know, it's down there. It's not up there. It's down there. But it's, you know, it's supposed to be a nice place, Pitraloka. But, you know, there's where the Pitris, the forefathers go, and it's different things. I'll send you the documents. But then Samyapuri is, I think I have the name right, there's two references in the Bhagavatam. And one of the references is at the top of Mount Sumeru. At the top of Mount Sumeru, there's one of Brahma's abodes. He's existing in Brahmaloka at the very top of the universe. But in the Svarga region, he has like a summer home or something, and it's at the top of Mount Sumeru. And then the protectors of the directions, they're also there. There's eight directions, north, south, east, west, and the ones in between. So there's, in a two-dimensional picture, there's eight directions. One of those is the residence of Yamaraj, Samyapuri. Do I have it right? Okay. So, look it up while we're sitting here. And then there's another place that goes by the same name, and that's Manasotra Mountain. You're familiar with Manasotra Mountain? One of the islands is Plakshadweep, and on top of Plakshadweep is a circular island called Manasotra Mountain. And that's the path that the sun god rides on his chariot around Manasotra Mountain. And then there's four directions, and one of them is where the abode of Yamaraj is on the eastern side. So where it's daytime over here, it's nighttime over there, and so forth. It's all this is described in fifth canto. So he's got three abodes. They go by Samyapuri, if I have it right, on top of Mount Sumeru, around Manasotra Mountain, and at the bottom of the universe, below, above Garbhadak Ocean and below Patalaloka. So those seven lower planets, sometimes called the netherworld in English, they're not the hellish planets. They're lower planets, but the hellish planets are below that. And that's one of the places where Yamaraj is. So when he was cursed by Manduka Muni, in his case, he left there. But sometimes they can just expand. This is what Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur says about Jai and Vijay. Their expansions descended and did the, you know, the three lifetimes as demons. That's Vishwanath. Or, like we heard, like multiple times, about Nanda and Yashoda had their expansions, Drona and Dara, because they were, and so forth. And, you know, Vasudeva and Devaki have their expansions, and they're living in the demigod realm. So it's really complicated. But, you know, so back to your question, you know, when Yamaraj was cursed, in that case, there's two options. And we find, and maybe there's more than, you know, cycle of yugas where this happens. He's replaced by Aryama. And then when he returns, Aryama steps to the side and he takes over again. Or another option B is he can expand himself and, you know, become Vidura. Then that's technology. You know, if someone tries to explain some technology, computer technology to me, it's like, you know, tell somebody that knows and they can help me. I don't want to learn computer technology. But there are people that know. And there are people that know all of these things about the science of the Vedas and our chart. Prabhupada didn't include all of this for, you know, the audience that he was addressing, the people that know nothing about nothing. And our acharyas address it. The predecessor acharyas, because they're people that think they know something about everything. So they give the story as it is. And there's different explanations. Because it's, you know, Krishna's not a cookie cutter God. He does things different ways at different times, and because he has unlimited potencies, and it's quite fine because he's all potent. Once that is understood, then possibilities are unlimited. And our acharyas know which one Krishna chose at different times. Or in this case, so you're back to your question. What happened to Yamaraj and the, you know, his function when he was cursed and he became Vidura? That was your question. We hear just one explanation. Aryama took his place. And there could be other possibilities, like his expansion became Vidura to fulfill the curse of a sage. But it was a benediction. The curse was, he's down there in the hellish planets doing dirty stuff, and he never gets to be with Krishna, so he got to be with Krishna. Anything else in the room? You have?
It may be a multi-part question, Guru Maharaj. So it's about someone asking how to overcome bad habits.
How to overcome bad habits.
Yeah. And I was suggesting to add Krishna if you don't have the strength to, not do it. That was where I want to get clarity. Is that okay? Because,
how could it not be okay?
Because in traditional, in the ISKCON world, bad habit means we should stop it.
Your condition was, supposing you can't just drop it, then what? You turn to Krishna. So you didn't have to be, one or the other. It could be some of both. Okay?
And I was also having a question for example, if you see the movies, why it should be called a bad habit? Why should we label it like
that? It's illusion. And it's addictive. It's illusion, and it's addictive. It's an illusion within an illusion.
Okay.
And then there's illusions within an illusion, And then where does the mind go when you put your hand in your bead bag?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The images that you saw in that powerful media. And the images that you see in the powerful media are crime, violence, they call it action movies. Give it a nice name and perfume it, and it's, it disturbs the mind.
Yeah. And that maybe, the third thing is just a small clarification. Like, when we are working on the bad habits, I say is don't do it out of hate. Like,
don't do it out of
hate.
Hate. You
don't like, hate.
You don't like yourself, or you don't like the habit, or you don't like people, or what is it you don't like? All of them.
Yeah.
That's tough. Where's your shelter when you have hate? What would a little bit of kindness do in the midst of hate? That's Krishna Leela's phrase. You know that one. Okay, is that it? We're ready for online. A lot of questions. Uh-oh, it's 20 minutes before the hour.
But about the reference of Yamaraja's kingdom, and sixth canto, third chapter, third verse, it says that the order carriers of Yamaraj were baffled and defeated by the order carriers of Vishnu. They approached their master, the controller of Samyamanipuri.
Samyamani. Yeah, so it's Samyamani, and then usually it's without the word Puri at the end. It's Samyamani. Samyamani. Yes, okay. So Samyamani is a name that's used for the hellish domain. Samyamani is also used in the fifth canto for the top of Mount Sumeru, and it's also used for this Manasotra mountain place. Samyamani.
And the same reference is found, Amritakeli Mataji found in 10th canto also.
Okay, so, good. Samyamani. Go ahead.
So, Radha's question, Atulya Mataji's daughter. Atheists do not believe in existence of Krishna, and Krishna does not reveal himself to them.
Right.
In case of Shankachuda or Hiranyakashipu or similar other demons, why Krishna revealed himself to them?
They didn't see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They saw this insignificant fellow and, you know, that's what, when Krishna performs, when the Personality of Godhead performs pastimes in this created realm, then unqualified people can also see, but they can't see. They see something ordinary. They can't see. Just like people see the deity form that are atheists, they don't see the deity, they see something wood, stone, or metal. They can see, but they can't see transcendence. That's the meaning.
So, she has a second part of the question. Is it that Hiranyakashipu, etc., believed in existence of Krishna with inimical mood? Then who is better, an atheist or someone who has inimical mood towards Krishna but still accepts?
So the assumption that the only one who understood that Krishna was the personality of God, this is from our acharyas, was Shishupal. In the previous births, they didn't. In Shishupal's birth, he did. And during his life, he was constantly meditating on the form of Krishna, the activities of Krishna, the this and that, Krishna, Krishna. Aside from speaking the name Krishna in derision, in scorn. He was not a devotee, but he was very Krishna conscious. And then the others, they saw it in an ordinary way. So now, read the last part of her question. Which is better, this or that? Just the last part.
The last part is, who is better, an atheist or someone who is inimical toward Krishna?
Well, atheists are inimical towards Krishna. So it depends on, you know, the type of atheist. The inimical toward Krishna mood. Shishupal was inimical toward Krishna, but he wasn't an atheist. So being inimical toward Krishna but not an atheist is better than being an atheist.
There's a comment from Sthira Mataji about the term Guhyakas. She came across first canto, 9th chapter, 3rd verse, where Bhishma Dev says, or Bhishma Dev is passing away in that place, O sage amongst the Brahmanas, Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, who followed seated on a chariot with Arjuna. Thus King Yudhishthir appeared very aristocratic, like Kuvera surrounded by the companions, Kuvera surrounded by his companions. The Guhyakas.
Yeah, I read that yesterday. Yeah. So their followers of Kuvera, that's not in question. It's stated in this section also. But what's the distinction between the Guhyakas and Yakshas? Just like we read this morning, Guhyakas parentheses Yakshas, or Yakshas parentheses Guhyakas. Are they interchangeable, or is one a subset of the other, or what is it? That was the question. And I don't need, you know, I personally don't feel I need an answer, because Prabhupada doesn't make it clear, and nor have I seen anything anywhere that makes it clear. This is this, and that's that. The only indication seems to be the Guhyakas look after the wealth of Kuvera, and Yakshas are general followers of Kuvera, and a subset of those who look after the wealth of Kuvera are the Guhyakas. It seems that that's the distinction. Go ahead.
This is from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Do Ramayana and Mahabharata, besides many things, prove that this world is not to be considered home, but rather an inspiration to look for real home and relationship?
Yes, yes.
And he has a next question. To the best of my knowledge, Srila Prabhupada is probably the only one out of India who understood Vedic treasure to the fullest. If anyone else did, but didn't share with the world, is this correct?
Is it correct? Well, is it correct that some people... Does he want to know, is it correct that they didn't share? Does he want to know, is it they didn't share because they didn't know? So he can send the answer to that. You know, clarify his question, please. Go to the next one.
Visalaksha Prabhu's question. In the Kali Yuga, the turbulence of material energy frighten in many, many ways, since I am a conditioned soul. How to understand the reason behind, and what steps shall I take to be fixed always in the service of Guru and Krishna?
It's, you know, you follow the bhakti process. The how-to questions have that very simple answer. You know, it's not a mystery. You follow the bhakti process to get beyond illusion. And meanwhile, we struggle with illusion because we're kind of attached to illusion. So you follow the bhakti process carefully.
And there is Harita Mataji, seems to be seeing the class on Facebook, probably new. So is Goddess of Fortune Lakshmi different from Radharani? Why God need to expand as Radharani?
Radharani, it's not that once upon a time there wasn't Lakshmi, and then Radharani pulled her chin and said, you know what? I think I should expand myself as the Goddess of Fortune. And then the Goddess of Fortune came into being. It's not like that. That's a chronological description. So it's not like that. But the Vedas teach, and in Baladev Vidyabhusan's commentary on Vedanta Sutra, you know, I don't know the verse and so forth, but I have read that he explains the Goddess of Fortune is Radharani's expansion. Ontologically, the Goddess of Fortune, Lakshmi, is Radharani's expansion. Radharani is the eternal. She doesn't come into being. She's the eternal Ladini Shakti, that portion of Krishna's internal potency. And Lakshmi is the eternal consort of Narayan in the Vaikuntha realm. So if you can understand those two things, I think you have an answer to your question.
This is Sucharita Mataji. How to curb the tendency of taking anything for granted?
Gratitude.
And then Uttama Bhakta Prabhu has another question. If there are traces of racism in ISKCON, does that mean we haven't understood the ABC of Bhagavad Gita and spirituality?
Of course. And as Bhakti Tirtha Swami explained on several occasions, those who are in an African-American body and feel disturbed by that, they're in the same boat. That is to say, the victim and the perpetrator are in the same boat. Rather, both the victim and perpetrator either need to rise above the bodily conception. That's easier said than done, but that's the requirement. That's what we're called upon to do. And it's not just, you know, racism, it's any ism that's rooted in the bodily conception. We may be, without going into it, you know, this is called upadhi. I'm American. And, you know, some of you were born in India. Now, maybe by now you're American citizens, but, you know, seeing it, I'm a brahmana, or I'm a sannyasi, or I'm a grahastha, or I'm a something. They're all upadhis. And one is called upon to rise above and beyond those upadhis. Doesn't mean we have to stop being a householder or stop being a sannyasi or stop being a whatever you are. But it's not, you know, that's not, you conduct yourself according to time, place, circumstance, but it's not who we are. We abide by the laws of a country, but we're not citizens of a country. We're citizens of Krishna. You know, in the higher sense of reality. And it takes intelligence to be able to navigate that. But Krishna gives the intelligence to navigate that for those who want to be always in their relationship with him, regardless of what the circumstance is. Go ahead.
This is Radha Kunja Bihari Prabhu. Is karma philosophy applicable in spiritual world? If not, how can we explain Jaya and Vijaya getting cursed and having to take birth?
It's not applicable in the spiritual world, and we understand it with a higher sense of rasa. Do it quickly, and you can hear recordings of this topic. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains. There were three different positions and Narayan resolved them. Jain Vijay prayed, "Oh dear Lord Narayan, we understand that you have a chivalrous mood and you'd like to have some, you know, combat. But who is a suitable person to be your opponent? If you like, we can do the service." That was their prayer. And that's one party. Then a second party is the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. Lord Narayan instructed Jain Vijay, not just in the seventh gate, but, you know, to guard his quarters, he wanted to rest. Now, Narayan doesn't need to rest, but it was a pastime. So he went to rest and said, "Don't let anybody in." So the goddess of fortune came and they said, "Sorry, you can't enter." "But I'm the goddess of fortune." "Sorry, you can't enter. The instruction is no one is to enter. The Lord will be up soon. He's just resting." So she became angry. Now, how come the goddess of fortune is becoming angry? Because it's a pastime. And then she later informed Narayan, "You do something with these two, Jai and Vijay. They should be reprimanded." But he didn't want to reprimand them because they did what he wanted. And so when they were cursed by the Kumaras and the Lord supported it, she was like, okay. So she was satisfied. Jai and Vijay were satisfied. and the four Kumaras were satisfied because they cursed and the Lord supported their curse. He was respecting Brahminical utterances. So it was a pastime for his own purposes in a very interesting way. And what finally, we should understand that's not the norm. That's each time Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha appear, it's not Jayan Vijay. That's an exception. There's other persons who are actually demons that take that position. That's the norm.
Uttama Bhakta Prabhu has the clarification for the other question. So
this is our last question, however many it's on the list. Doesn't matter how many. We're going to stop.
Is there anyone besides Srila Prabhupada who has the same application or spirit of sharing the Vedic treasure?
Sure. There are acharyas that do that. Prabhupada was especially empowered. He did so very amazingly, but others do, for sure. Srila Prabhupada ki.